Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 30 years. Yikes! What a busy day yesterday. Two hip replacements, four knee replacements. People come from all over. Ridgecrest. I hope that place is on the crest of a ridge, because otherwise I have no idea where that is. Bakersfield. The home, in my mind, of Sweet Surrender, the greatest bakery for chocolate cake in America. But anyway, the Weekend Warrior Nation is gigantic, and I very much appreciate all of you. Brad Greenberg just wrote me a beautiful letter that I just read, sat down with a pen, put a stamp on it. I love getting letters from you guys. So keep it up. Just send it to ESPN, to the station. Well, it's Father's Day. Not really. It was the day after yesterday's show. I can't celebrate it the day before, but I can celebrate it after it occurred. And that's what we're going to do today. But we're going to do it in an alternative way. Because not everybody's blessed like I was to have a father that I knew about, that I grew up with. Mine, Abraham Clapper, and his stories of born in 1915, working to help support the family during the Great Depression, and then going to fight in World War II and come back and try to put together a family and raise them. It was really, really difficult for him, certainly financially, but I was blessed. Not everybody is so blessed. Not everybody gets to have one. And certainly going to Africa for 2 weeks, I got to see how animals behave. Who's the father? Well, it turns out there could be many different fathers, because when you don't have one, someone else has to step up, or ultimately you have to become the father. So Father's Day is different for everybody, and particularly for folks who are not lucky like I was. So it made me think all week about the alternate universe, but reality for many people like you listening, who did not have the father figure, the actual father. And you know how much I love the world of art and sports and surgery. Where is the alternate father? Where is the father figure? Well, in sports, we see it all the time, because we see it in the coach. The coach ends up being a father figure of sorts for many of those athletes. And I can't think of a better story to tell you guys today than the story of Allen Iverson and his college coach, Coach John Thompson. How this all came about will absolutely bring you to tears potentially, but it is an amazing story. And what about in art or music? The story you're about to hear of Graham Nash. He's the only guy in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for not one band, the Hollies, but two bands, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. What a gifted musician who actually came to visit me in Manhattan Beach, spent a couple hours with me wanting to learn how to sculpt. Can you imagine? That's a whole nother story for another show, but I actually got to spend a lot of time with Graham Nash out of the blue because he knows I sculpt me. I guess he listens to the show. I don't know. He came and met me one Saturday after the show in my studio in Manhattan Beach. It was really great. But he's a special guy because the story of him and his father who went to jail and how he had to be the man of the house and quit school and help support the family. Father's Day was different for him in his house, and you're going to hear about it. Clapper Vision, I cannot wait. I'm going to teach you all about the Dodger pitcher, Rich Hill. He previously had Tommy John surgery on this pitching arm, this left elbow. I think it was 2011. They did an MRI, they did an ultrasound, and the ulnar collateral ligament, which was repaired, is fine. But why does he have flexor tendon strain? What is the relationship between your forearm strain and ache and the ligament that stabilizes your elbow? How are the two of them relatable? You need a Clapper Vision, right? So at 8:15, we're going to do that. At 7:15, my guest is calling in from New York, one of my favorite surgeons in the world. And talk about father figure, He teaches many, many, many of the young surgeons all about knee surgery. And Thomas Edison is gone, the greatest inventor of all time. But the Thomas Edison is still alive in orthopedic surgery, inventing things. And I actually used one of his widgets and gadgets this week in surgery on a very complicated case. And it was invented by Dr. Steve Haas, and he's calling in at 7:15. I can't wait to talk to him. But let's get right into the Father's Day experience, the alternative Father's Day. Listen to this song. This is a song from 1966, recorded by the Hollies. Became a big hit for them. Ironically, actually, this song was written by a man named Graham Goulding. Goldman, Graham Goldman, who came home one day and actually his father was a songwriter who liked to kibitz with him. And his son said, I'm going to write a song about being at a bus stop and seeing a pretty girl and what to say to her. Well, the father was a songwriter, Jaime Goldman, and said to his son, I've got some lyrics to open your song you talked about. Really, Dad? This is the opening line. Bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. Isn't that cool? Jaime Goldman. This propelled this young bunch of musicians from London, England, who shared the stage many times with the Beatles. They're active at the same time. But the story is all about a father and a son, Graham Nash and his dad. Listen to this story.
Like many of the men in Salford, William worked at the local steel
factory. William is Graham Nash's...
Great sense of humor.
Graham Nash's dad.
Could be very strict.
This is his sister.
I remember him shouting, but I do. You know, if we did things wrong.
And here's Graham Nash talking about his father.
Though free time was scarce and money tight, William Nash did get to indulge his love of photography on Sundays. He would take pictures of family outings and then rush back to develop them in the dark room he had set up in Graham's bedroom.
At 10 years old, he turned me on to the magic of seeing an image appear from a blank piece of paper in a colorless liquid and, wait there, son, hold on. Dad, there's nothing happening. What's going on? Wait. Dad. And then all of a sudden, this elephant or giraffe that he'd taken the picture of at the zoo came into being, and I've never forgotten that moment.
So Graham is at 10 years old. He grows up with this beautiful relationship with his dad.
He said that a camera that my father had bought from a friend of his at work had been stolen, and that they wanted to know what the name of my father's friend was. And in the north of England, and I'm pretty sure it's the same all over the world, you just don't grass on your friends. You don't tell the police anything, right? And to make a long story short, for a $20 camera, my father went to jail for a year.
And when he came out, he was not the same man.
The family was stunned and financially strapped, so Graham quit school to go to work.
I think because his father was in prison and he was put in the role of caretaker, and that's what he does, and he's a caretaker. And I think that's a real core of who he is, a real essence.
Graham Nash had to become the father figure in that house because his dad was gone.
William Nash was released from a prison after a year, a broken man. Neither his pride, health, ever recovered from his time in jail. He died several years after his release at the age of 46, still embarrassed at the humiliation he had caused his family.
And that's one of the pains that my father went through, that how his decision not to tell on his friend that ended up having him go to jail for a year, how it affected his wife, my mother, and how it affected me and my sister Elaine. You know, how it affected us. You know, people looking at us, people going, the father's in jail, all that kind of stuff. Deep psychological scars, which I've tried all my life to ignore, and I've realized lately that I can't ignore them.
You can't ignore them, Graham, but they became a part of you, and we're all the beneficiaries because it made you the rock star and the speaker for all of us. What about in sports? Listen carefully to these sound bites because you're going to hear the 2001 NBA final. I remember this game when Allen Iverson single-handedly in the playoffs beat the Lakers. This is when he did that crossover and left Tyronn Lue on the ground and made the shot and then walked over, lying on the floor, Tyronn Lue. There was nobody. I got to see Michael Jordan live, Kobe Bryant. But if you ask me hands down who's the greatest basketball player I ever saw with my own eyeballs, it was Allen Iverson.
One thing about Iverson, there is no quit in him. You just know he's got a couple of bullets left in his holster. You just know he's coming at him.
Here's Allen Iverson outside the arc. He tees up a three. It's good. He drilled it. A three by Allen Iverson. 1 minute to go in overtime. What a comeback here. The Lakers had the Sixers on the ropes. They come fighting out of the corner.
Here's Iverson. Lou, the defender, stays right with him. Allen wants to go. Wants the baseline.
He fires two ball. Got it again. He's way too good. He steps around Lou and drilled it.
But let's hear a little bit about the beginning of Allen Iverson from his mom, Ann Iverson.
Allen Iverson was raised in Hampton, Virginia. In 1975, the newborn Allen and his 15-year-old mother, Ann,
15.
Moved into his grandmother's house, located, ironically, on Jordan Drive. And from the moment she saw him, Ann knew her son's destiny.
In the hospital room, they bring this long, 22-inch long child whose arms pass his kneecaps. And so I said, oh my goodness, I got me a ball player.
Who knew she was a Jewish mother?
I came home one day. And my mom said, today you're going to basketball practice. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to basketball practice. I don't play basketball. I play football and baseball. And I told her I thought basketball was soft. And she said, well, your coach is on his way. He's coming to pick you up, and you're going. I cried all the way out the door.
He was so good and so confident.
I never forget this. He said, I could take MJ. I said, well, we thought he meant one of the players that we'd give me to play. He said, I could take MJ, and you know, the coaches and everybody else just said, he said, I could take Michael Jordan. I mean, he said it in a believable way that made you believe he could take Michael Jordan.
This is his AA. That was his AAU coach. But listen to his story and why it's so similar to Graham Nash, who as a teenager had to quit school and go to work to help support the family. He was the man of the house. So was Allen Iverson.
Allen had to grow up in a hurry, from growing up on the streets, from moving from apartment, to housing project, to watching his mom struggle to make ends meet, to having to take care of his younger sisters when his mom wasn't around. He was the man of the house at age 12.
It's a different kind of Father's Day for someone like Allen Iverson.
You know, I remember one time we went on an AAU tournament when I was 13, and we didn't have no lights on in the house because she spent the money for the light bill on my sneakers. Always looked up to my mom like she was the one that told me I could be anything that I wanted to be. You know, I believed it.
In his junior year in high school, he was state champ in basketball and in football, captain of the team. Nobody ever did that before. But then the wheels came off the wagon because this is what happened during his senior year of high school.
I think that night I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I want, you know, I want people to know that was the case, not that I'm no type of bad guy.
Shockingly, Allen was convicted and sent to prison.
Prison.
He wasn't allowed to play basketball. He never played his senior year in high school. He never played football. They took something away from him that he enjoyed, that he liked.
Instead of being down on myself, I had to somehow get out of there and try to start all over. All I wanted and asked for from God was a second chance.
And that's when his mom, Ann Iverson, saw the broken man that her son was. So she took action.
But because of the negative publicity, colleges were reluctant to recruit him. Ultimately, a desperate Ann Iverson sought out the legendary tough love coach of Georgetown University.
Father figure.
Ann Iverson was the reason. She's the one who pricked my curiosity. It's no way if Ann Iverson hadn't, she cried, she did indicate the fact that, you know, she was pleading for her son's life. When I sit down and talk with him, the very first thing that I realize is that he was smart. He seems to have dealt with what has happened behind him, and that was important for me. I was impressed, and when I got finished, you know, I said, hey, you know, let's go for this.
Coach John Thompson saved his life, became a father figure for him.
Iverson would reward Thompson's faith by playing his heart out for him. But it seemed that while Allen could avoid defenders, he couldn't escape his reputation.
I heard some maliciously mean things said about him. I've never heard him complain about it. He's got too much pride and intelligence for that, and I respect that in him.
But people always still stereotype me, always felt like I was some type of bad guy because of, you know, what happened to me. But I think Coach Thompson did a great job keeping those people away from me.
I was lucky to have Abraham Clapper. Graham Nash was lucky for 15 years to have his dad. And Allen Iverson sought out and got the father figure in Coach John Thompson. And then has one of the greatest careers. To hell with winning a ring. Allen Iverson is a proud man who found a father figure in John Thompson. And when he got inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, listen to the speech that he gave. He's crying. He can't even speak. But he starts the speech by thanking his father figure, Coach John Thompson.
Coach Thompson was saving my life. For giving me the opportunity, I was recruited by every school in the country for football and basketball. And an incident happened in high school, and all that was taken away. No other teams, no other schools were recruiting me anymore. My mom went to Georgetown and begged him to give me a chance, and he did.
And the rest is history. So for all of you who have a father, cherish it. For the many of you who don't, you be the father. You be like Allen Iverson. You be like Graham Nash. And the world will be a better place. Coming up next, I can't wait to talk to one of the greatest, smartest minds in orthopedics, the great Dr. Steve Haas, calling in from New York. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's Carrie Ann. Why would Steve Paulette be playing Carrie Ann by the Hollies? Because the founder of that group was the great Graham Nash, who had to leave school because his dad went to prison for not telling on his friend. Today's the alternate Father's Day show, where a father figure can be a coach or a teacher. And one of the greatest teachers I know in orthopedics is joining me now, the great Dr. Steve Haas. Dr. Haas, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
How are you, Dr. Clapper?
I just love talking to you. I'm president of the fan club. This is fantastic.
Well, I got to tell you, I just been listening to you, and I am so moved by what you're talking about, fathers and role models and mentors. Because I think anybody who's done anything good has to thank somebody else for it. And it's usually our dads or our mentors. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate to have lots of good mentors. And you know, I'm happy as I could be to have that and honor them on Father's Day.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was last Sunday, but I want to talk about it now. So tell us, Dr. Haas, about your dad. What did he do for a living?
My dad was a businessman and initially sold insurance, and then he worked in the leather business. But I admired him the most. He came over from Germany in 1935. Actually, a crazy story. They actually came over. It was hard to get into the country back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he swapped homes with a German family that wanted to go back to Germany.
Wow.
And they were in Germany, and his father swapped their homes. And by swapping their homes, he was able to get into the country. And so the family got into the country. They got out of Germany. He went back to Germany and fought against Germany in the war. But he always felt incredibly fortunate all his life to have had, you know, the ability to get out and to then go back and to contribute to the country by, you know, fighting in the war.
Where did the idea to become a doctor and then an orthopedic surgeon come from in your life?
I always wanted to do something in design and architecture or engineering and building.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across, actually, when I went to college, I was playing football.
Mm-hmm.
And my team doc, by the name of Ken DeHaven, was one of the pioneers in arthroscopy.
Mm.
And so I was thinking about medicine because I sort of changed my thoughts a little bit, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And I didn't know about orthopedic surgery. I didn't have experience. I had sprained ligaments, but never broke a bone.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with Ken DeHaven, and he was one of the first people doing arthroscopic knee surgery. And it was just fascinating. And there, I said, I can have the, you know, design and spatial things that you have with, I always loved, but you could actually fix things and help people. This was the most beautiful thing I can think of.
Wow. So Ken DeHaven was such a mentor for you. How about the man that we had in common, Dr. Insall? So we're going back 30 years. That's how long I know you. I can't believe this. But here was a guy who literally invented the idea of replacing the knee. He has such a big role in so many of us, but he must have particularly hit the nerve in the center of your heart like Cupid shot an arrow in your heart. What was it about Dr. Insall that so captured you?
It was his passion. You know, it was his absolute passion and love for what he did. He would sit, I mean, people think this is sort of crazy, and your listeners think you're nuts when you say this, but I loved, you would sit there with a model of the knee and sit there or model of a replacement part. And we would literally sit there for an hour, hours and hours, and sometimes with wine, sometimes without, and sit there and talk about how the design could be more like the real thing and how we can make it move like the real thing and how, what things were wrong and needed to be improved and, you know, just sort of dwelling on this, you know, metal and plastic object and then the model of the real anatomy. And you think about this and say, well, you know, what do you have to talk about for hours? But you could do it for, you know, a crazy amount of time. And it was so intense, and he was caring all that time. I mean, I was a young guy when I started with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, you know, displayed this love of what he did, love of the fact that he had helped so many people. I always say, you know, it's interesting, you know, as a doctor, you get great benefit of helping people. But he also shared that through his passion that since he designed or developed the first successful knee replacement,
mm-hmm.
you know, you touch in your practice, you know, you touch hundreds of people, thousands maybe, in a year. But he was touching, because his designs were put in all over the world,
yeah.
he was touching
millions.
Hundreds of thousands of people,
yeah.
and ultimately millions of people.
Yep.
And to me, you know, what could be better? I mean, it was the fact that you could take what you're doing and expand
right.
it to the world. And yeah. that, to me, was beautiful.
He's the kind of guy that when I look back on my life, I cherish and remember every single second. He ran a lot, too. These guys are so special that you remember every single thing they said, even when they were talking about coffee at lunch or whatever it is, because you figure you don't want to miss something because something amazing must have come out of their mouth. And to some extent, each and every one of the young surgeons who comes and are lucky to be able to be in your operating room or in your clinic with you, you must pay homage to Dr. Insull and Randall, your mentors, your father figures, but particularly Insull, when you now speak to someone else, right? You feel him channeling through you as you speak, correct?
Absolutely. And you know, you sometimes feel, you know, in a way small because you can never fill his shoes. But
right.
But the biggest honor I think I got it in all my career was that I got his chair to sit in at his academic chair to sit in. To me, that was like the greatest honor I could have. And the one thing that I feel like that I contributed, you've seen this if you come visit at special surgery, mm-hmm. is that we got his portrait put up. Mm-hmm. Because I think it was so important that the young people, he had such a influence on my life, and he actually, as an institution, he's had such a major influence. And when young people come, they don't always know this. And so we get so many young people, the residents and the fellows coming through. I think it's so important for them to be at conference every day and see him looking at them.
Yep.
And to see who he is and to put a face, because if they put a face on it, they will remember him much better than just seeing a name at the bottom or at the top of an article or in the textbook. So I think that was that somewhat of a tribute, at least to carry on what he had done, and to have people remember him.
What a great way to have a Father's Day show and talk about Dr. Insull, who's not your dad, but is your father figure, and for all of us, was a father figure. But I want to talk about you, Dr. Haas, and your creative mind, bringing the idea of art and science together like Steve Jobs did for the computer. And I don't want to get into that. Can you just stay on? We're going to take some pace and bills. Can you stay on for another segment?
I'm not going to stay.
Okay, we love it. All right, the great Dr. Steve Haas calling in from the Hospital for Special Surgery. We're going to talk about how does a mind like his come up with gadgets that save the world. It's incredible. Coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. What a beautiful song. What a beautiful voice. That's the great Graham Nash. And we're talking about Graham Nash and Allen Iverson because it's a show about fathers and father figures. And I'm joined by one of my favorite orthopedic surgeons. Put it this way, if I need knee surgery, I can't operate on myself. Who's doing my surgery? The man you're listening to now, the great Dr. Steve Haas. Steven, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
So, I want you to know, this week, this past Wednesday, I had a woman come down from Northern California where she previously had a hip replacement, but many years ago had a terrible fracture to her thigh bone, her femur, and it was shattered. I was like here's a clapper vision. I'm like a pilot in the fog. I know I'm near LAX, but I can't see it because of the fog. So they flip on the radar, which allows the pilot to fly the plane without seeing anything because of the fog. I could not use any traditional landmarks because her bone had been broken before and healed in this horrible fashion that there were no landmarks. I was in the fog, but I was able to use radar, GPS, a device to give me the radar of where I was in this woman's leg, and did a beautiful knee replacement on her thanks to you. And I'm so excited to have you here now because I got to ask you, Thomas Edison is dead. I can't talk to him. You're the Thomas Edison of orthopedic surgery. Where did you come up with the idea of using this radar GPS device called OrthoLine?
Well, you know, as in many things, there are teams and help. Mm-hmm. You put minds together to do it. But I'm going to just tell you, I think there are a couple things that I think are helpful or so critical to getting good designs. And mm-hmm. I think you know many of these from some of the great things that you invented. But first of all, you have to have a problem. You have to look at it and say, what's my problem I have to solve? You don't want to sit and say, I got technology, how do I make it, how do I use it? You want to say, I have a problem, and then say, what technology can I use to solve that problem?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to say, well, your first thoughts are, yeah, but you can't do that because of lots of other little things. That you can't do that because this isn't right or that isn't right. You have to eliminate the barriers. Mm-hmm. Get rid of the barriers and make it work, mm-hmm. and then work backwards to solve those barrier problems. Because so many people, I think, get stopped at step one. They start off and they say, well, how do I solve the problem? They say, nah, there's too many things. This is in the way. I can't do it. And then they stop. What you do is you get rid of that thing out of your mind and say, well, let's solve that later on and let's work the problem and work it through. So, as you said, you know, if you look at doing surgery, first of all, there are many cases, unfortunately a lot, that present like the woman you talked about, mm-hmm. where, you know, their bodies didn't read the anatomy book, right? They don't exactly follow the way it was supposed to look, or they've had trauma or surgery that their anatomy doesn't look the same. But we know what our goal is to get to it, and we know that there was a problem because we weren't achieving the goal at the highest rates that we could. So the idea of using technology, and if you think about it, we have an iPhone. Everybody has an iPhone or iPhone-like device in their pocket these days. And every one of those iPhone has an accelerometer. It knows in space where the position is. So why not apply the technology that you have in your iPhone to a handheld device that you could use in surgery that will guide you? It's, we're just looking to relate spaces, which if you know the position, and accelerometers and gyroscopes know the position, so if we know the positions and how they move as we move the leg, we know the position of where we want to place our implants or make our preparatory cuts to the bone. So if you look at that basic philosophy and we look at what we have available, we could solve that problem. And so I think this is a much simpler and practical way and much more low-cost and efficient way. You can do it other ways. You could do it with large computers and robots, but those are highly costly and cumbersome in the OR. These are small devices, the size of an iPhone, that you can attach to a patient. You can read and get the accuracy of virtually 95% to 100% accuracy. I mean, it's quite amazing that you can do that with little handheld devices, just like it's amazing of what we do with our iPhones every day.
I looked to the ceiling during the end of that case, and I said, wherever you are, Dr. Haas, thank you. You've made this unbelievably easy for me. I want to ask you, and I've got a couple of minutes left, when you meet a brand new young surgeon who wants to learn from you, is there a particular question or test that you gives you a sense of, like, after all these years, it doesn't take you more than a few seconds to figure out this person is going to be great or they're really going to waste my time. What is it that you learn from your mentors, your father figures like Dr. Insull, to ask or to watch or test at you when you first, because you're a busy guy, you don't have time to do the learning curve with folks, that you know you've got a good one in your hands? Is there a particular move or test?
You know, I must say that that is a hard one, but I do think that you have to have, you have to sense that somebody, A, is inquisitive, that they would show a sincere interest in what they're doing. And you can tell passion. You know, you, people can lie about facts, but it's hard to lie about passion. We sense that. And then the second thing, which is a sort of a requisite, that they should be prepared. If someone gets to work with me and I ask them basic facts that, you know, that I, that they really should know, not necessarily even about the patient, but just basic concepts that they that I know that they should know, and if they cared a lot, they'd know. And so I expect that of them. So I think those two things, to feel they have the passion and to feel they made the commitment to know some basic understanding, I think that shows me they're in there and they want to be there and they're committed to doing it.
This is exactly what John Thompson said when he met Allen Iverson at the behest of his mom after he got caught in this snafu in high school and nobody wanted. They thought he'd be too much of a troublemaker. This is what John Thompson said when he met the troublemaker, Allen Iverson, for the first time.
But because of the negative publicity, colleges were reluctant to recruit him. Ultimately, a desperate Ann Iverson sought out the legendary tough love coach of Georgetown University.
Ann Iverson was the reason. She's the one who pricked my curiosity. There's no way if Ann Iverson hadn't, she cried, she did indicate the fact that, you know, she was pleading for her son's life. When I sit down and talk with him, the very first thing that I realize is that he was smart. He seems to have dealt with what has happened behind him, and that was important for me. I was impressed, and when I got finished, you know, I said, hey, you know, let's go for this.
So he felt he was prepared, just like what you said, that he was prepared to work hard and do the right thing. That is why you're the John Thompson of orthopedic surgery, Steve Haas.
you're overly kind.
Listen, I love you, and I want to thank you for getting up early to be with us and to share the fact that, you know what, there's God only made a few people like you and maybe just one, and it's an honor and a pleasure to have you as a friend.
Belated Father's Day to you, okay?
All right, Steve Haas, you're the best. Bye-bye. I'll talk to you soon. God bless. Bye. All right, Warriors, that's the great Dr. Steve Haas, one of my favorite people. And like I say, I can't do my own knee replacement, but if I needed one, he's the guy I'm going to. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. And I want to tell you about a dessert I had this week that I celebrate Father's Day every year. It's not chocolate. It comes from a bakery, though, and it's a triangular-shaped cookie that has a filling in it that's poppy seeds. And the dessert is called a Hummantaschen, and I have it every Father's Day. And the best Hummantaschen you'll ever have in Los Angeles. Coming up, I'm going to tell you where that is. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Data sang bass. Gotta love Johnny Cash. Lately, Ventura reminds me so much of where Johnny Cash is from. He had a house up there, actually, that we're going to change the name of Ventura to Ventucky. All right, let's hear this Ernie Banks story. Let's go to the first caller.
Hello.
Hi, it's Dr. Clapper. I can't see your name because the computer blocked it out. What's your name?
Alan, A-L-A-N.
Alan, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate it. You listen every week?
I try to, but more than that, we've got a date next Friday.
Oh, okay. All right, can't wait.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait either. Anyway, I was shooting a basketball game at the old sports arena. I'm sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
And big, you know, a huge black mountain comes behind me. I didn't see him. Knocks off my hat. I'm always wearing, was wearing a Cubs hat. And says, give me that hat. And I said, I looked up at him and he says, do you know who I am? And I, oh, my God, it's Mr. Cubs. He takes my hat off, signs it. Always Have Hope, Alan, signed Ernie Banks. I couldn't believe it. My lifelong hero, it was unbelievable.
This is the beauty of sports in life, because we all have something that unites us. When I make rounds at the hospital, from the lady who pops out of the room, the cleaning lady, to the nurse, to the head of anesthesia, to the pathologist, I can talk about Anthony Davis, and everybody wants to talk about the Lakers. It unites us as a society. It is not frivolous, which is why I spend each and every Saturday morning for 8.5 years now bringing it all together. Because for me, injuries obviously decide who's going to win and who's going to lose. If you're a Dodger fan, what happened to Rich Hill's forearm, which I'm going to get into at 8:15? But sports, you and your relationship with Ernie Banks, all these years later, look, you're like a kid talking about your favorite Chicago Cub. It's a beautiful thing to hear, Alan.
Yeah, hopefully you'll make me like a kid again. We will get out there and do something else.
I'm going to get you walking again without pain. That's my job, because I'm the son of a carpenter and the son of a nurse, and the two together became an orthopedic surgeon. That's right, Alan.
Fantastic.
All right. God bless you. Yeah.
One question. You really like fermentation with Mun?
Exactly. That's exactly with Mun. Exactly. That's what you call the poppy seeds with the sugar in it.
Yeah.
And the best Hamantaschen. Oh, man, you sit down with a cup of coffee with a lot of sugar in the coffee and a lot of cream in it, so it almost looks like melted coffee ice cream, and you dip into it the triangle tip of that Hamantaschen with poppy seed, and it's soaking wet with coffee, and you put it in your mouth. As soon as it hits your tongue, it starts to disintegrate into the most incredible taste. You know who makes the best Hamantaschen? And I've eaten at all the bakeries. In the Valley, Bee's Bakeries on Reseda Boulevard. Oh, my God. They got the best poppy seed Hamantaschen. Treat yourself. That's what you need to do. And tell them Dr. Clapper sent you from the Weekend Warrior Show.
I'll see you next Friday.
All right. Can't wait, young man. Thank you. All right. Let's go to Steven in Lake Forest. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Dr. Clapper, love your show.
Thank you for listening. I only got a couple of minutes, so let me see if I can help you quick.
I got a spine issue, C3, C4.
Right.
Disc protrusion, and it's mild cord effacement. I'm just kind of summarizing the...
Any numbness tingling in your arm?
I had it initially. That's what brought me through the whole process. Some pain in my hand and tingling, little itching, and in my right foot. Since then, it's gotten a lot better, but they're still recommending surgery.
So let me just, I'm not going to give you any specific recommendation, but I'm just going to tell you this, Stephen.
Okay.
One day I will, and I love to surf, and I'm a surgeon, so I'm using my arms. I can't have any trouble. I wake up one day, and I'm a righty. My right triceps muscle, I could not extend my arm. I still could use my fingers and hands, so I could still work as a surgeon, but I couldn't push up to get up from my surfboard, which to me is like taking away my left arm, basically, or my leg. You can't take surfing away. I don't want to live if I can't surf. I couldn't push up. I went and had an MRI, and at one of my discs in my neck, Clapper, C5, I had I think it was 7 millimeter. It was a huge disc, which knocked out 0 out of 5 my triceps muscle. I had a nerve conduction study, and I was so depressed. About, oh my God, and I saw all my neurosurgeon friends. They were licking their chops. They couldn't wait to operate on my neck. And you know what? I met one guy who said, go to the Relax the Back store. Instead of a pillow, get a airline pillow made of buckwheat. It's called a bucky. Sleep with that for a few days. Take some Advil, which I never take any medication. Take it with food for a few days, and then get in the pool. I did this. It didn't happen right away. And I tried traction. It didn't work. Took about a month. Can I tell you something? I lift weights. I went surfing Thursday afternoon for 3 hours. This is a few years ago it happened. I don't want to know what the new MRI would look like. All I know is this, Stephen. I'm back. Did I have surgery? No. That's all I'm going to tell you is the answer to you. My wife says I never answered a question. I'm answering your question by telling you my story. Capiche?
Okay. All right, I appreciate that.
All right, Stephen, I want you to do me a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Okay, will do.
All right, God bless you. All right, I think we got to take a break. Coming back, I got so many callers. We may have to take some calls in the first segment. But I do want to tell some stories. We'll get into it. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show. I'm going to get into Rich Hill, some Clapper Vision at 8:15. Thanks so much for joining. See you in a bit.